Oh no, I'll tell you what happened. I checked them and off they went. But you know, when I get into the office, this bloke McConaughey had ducked back to the barrack room. He'd only a week to do before he was getting demobbed. So, into the office, but half an hour later, company sergeant major came in, the wee Fuhrer, Phil Braith, he came in. He said, Corporal Clark said, why isn't McConaughey on his fatigue party? I said, he is on his fatigue party. He said, I've just found him lying in his bed there, you know? And I actually forget what actually transpired, but it came to the point where I had told a lie. So I was nicked. And once again, commanding officer. So he said to me, this is the third time within about 3 months you've been up in front of me, Colonel Clark said. Are you prepared to accept my punishment? Oh no. Are you prepared to revert to the rank of permanent rifleman or be tried by court-martial? Well, the word court-martial frightened the life out of me, you know? I said, I'll revert to the permanent rank of rifleman. So, and that was one of the times when I came out, the RSM Elwood said, quick, into my office. So I went into his office like, you know, he said, don't take it too much to heart. He said, you're just a young fella yet, he said. And he said, nothing's permanent about it. He said, you can come back someday and become an NCO, like, you know. He said, so don't take it too much to heart. He said, now, he said, as you know, my batman a week ago got 4 years in prison for rape. Would you like to come as my batman? So I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that, like, you know. Now, his house, his married quarter was actually in the barracks, just near the entrance, the exit to the barracks. So I reported down the next morning, took my stripes down, reported the next morning, and became RSM Elwood's batman.
Now, well, how did you feel in yourself?
I mean, really down.
I mean, did you take Elwood's advice and sort of put it behind you, or did you let it fester? I mean,
I let it fester for a few weeks. I started going out to the canteen at night and drinking. And the thing was, Elwood, I had to report to his house every morning. His wife, Louise, she was a lovely little woman. She came from my hometown, Hamilton. And she used to virtually do all his kit, because she'd been in India with him and everything, like, you know. So I had bits of nothing to do. All I had to do in the morning was go in and wash the dishes, breakfast dishes, wash the kitchen out, the kitchen floor. And I was just a houseboy, you know. Which meant, in effect, in the afternoon I had nothing to do. So I'd just sneak out of the camp, sneak out of the barracks and go down to the big naffy club in Gibraltar, have a few beers. But then eventually, you know, common sense prevails, like, you know, and I, just before we left for Trieste, I sobered up and I requested to go back to my company again, which by then was commanded by another officer, Major A.C.A. McKinnon. A.C.A. McKinnon.
Now, what was he like?
Big, dour, Presbyterian Scot. Another no-nonsense man. Big, well-made guy. He was very, very... He was very good, a very God-fearing man. You wouldn't think he was the type of guy that could command jocks. You know, he was totally different from the average man or NCO in his company, you know. But once again, excellent company commander. He had a very bad wound in his top left shoulder, just below his shoulder blade, where he... So the story goes, and I don't doubt it. He was captured in Italy, him and his batman. And although the Germans took his weapon and ammunition off him, he still had a grenade hidden. And he, at a certain spot, he pulled the pin out of the grenade and shouted his batman, run! And he threw the grenade among the Germans. And as he turned to run, him and the batman was killed. And he got badly wounded in the shoulder. But he managed to escape, got away, and they returned to the Allied lines, you know?
So So he took over command.
So he took over command of the company, and he was, as I say, he was very strict, and he was very training conscious. He was all for training. So we found ourselves doing lots of weapon training and marching up and down the rock. He would organise route marches up and down the rock, and no problem. That was just before we left Gibraltar.
Now, were there any sort of preparations before you left, or was it just a routine move?
The whole thing was strictly routine. Everything was checked by the colour sergeants, you know, prior to moving out. And this is what I say, that the quartermaster that we had, Luggy Bunce, he brooked no nonsense. Every week he checked every barrack room, along with every colour sergeant. And this was the reason why, when we were leaving Gibraltar behind, that everything was in such good shape.
Now, how did you get to...
Just before we left...
Oh, sorry, carry on.
Just before we left Gibraltar, two or three months before we left, a new CO took over to replace Brickman. And the new CO was called Lieutenant Colonel Buchanan Dunlop. Buchanan-Dunlop.
What was he like?
Lovely man. Totally different from... He was the opposite from the
Brickman.
Totally opposite. But once again, the battalion was in such good nick, discipline-wise, everything-wise, that he didn't have any problems. He was a much more easier-going CO. He then got the battalion on parade shortly after he took over and said, look, he said, battalion is now under orders to move to Trieste, up in the north of Italy. And he said, I'll be going up there shortly to check on the barracks and the area and what have you. Come back and let you know what it's all about. In between that time, there's nothing much happening in the battalion. Anyway, off Buchanan Dunlop went. We used to call him BD. Off BD went, and he came back from Trieste, and he was absolutely furious, absolutely livid. We were relieving the 1st Battalion of the Royal Scots, and he told us that he was refusing to take his battalion up to Trieste until they had the barracks sorted out. The barracks were apparently in one hell of a state. No windows, doors. It was just as if the whole battalion had, the discipline had gone in the battalion for several months. They were in such a dreadful state that Buchanan Dunlop flew then to the War Office and demanded that this lot be sorted out before he brought our battalion up to take over. As a consequence of this, the CO of the 1st Royal Scots was given his bowler hat. He was kicked out of the army because the War Office, or I think it was the Quartermaster General's department, came out and had a look at it, and they said, "Oh no, this is beyond the pale. No regiment can take over this lot." So Gilbertson, Lieutenant Colonel Gilbertson of the Royal Scots, he was bowler hatted. And the promise was made that immediately every effort would be made to get the barracks back up into shape. But in the meantime, Colonel Buchanan Dunlop must move the Cameronians at the date stated. So that in effect was what happened. When we arrived there...
Now, when did you arrive?
We arrived on the... Let me see now. I think it was New Year's Eve. 49. New Year's Eve, 49.
Right.
We'd spent 2 years in Gibraltar. 47 to 49.
So it's December 49 you arrived in Trieste, or the last day of it.
December will do fine.
And how did you get there?
We went by troop ship. Now, I'm going to... Funny... Yeah, I think it was in Lancashire, HMT Lancashire, what we moved up in, which was Rolls Royce compared to the Almanzora. Much better ship, bigger, much more facilities, better food, better all round. We arrived in Trieste, and true to their word, the powers that be had got a move on the barracks, and things were starting to be put right.
Now, what was the name of these barracks? It's just gone out of your head. We'll come back to it, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And what state were they in when you arrived?
It was painfully obvious that I'd been in a dreadful state, but I would say that when we arrived there, they were 50% back to normal, but the work was still going on. And the dreadful thing about it was this, that Trieste was subjected to a dreadful wind called the Bora, which used to come down from the Alps. And it was a dreadful wind. It was absolutely... In fact, it was so strong that in the main streets, the authorities at a certain time of the year would erect chains so that people could hang on. And unfortunately, a lot of our windows hadn't been fully replaced. So therefore, some of these nights that we've got... They issued extra blankets from the QM stores to compensate for the lack of windows so that we could keep ourselves warm. And we just had to settle in. Now, we were confined to barracks for a week. Now, this is normal drill, but I should have mentioned this in Gibraltar. We're also confined for the first week in Gibraltar.
Now, why is this?
This is to make sure that you were acclimatised to the barracks, got used to the barracks, plus the fact that your turnout, when you were allowed out, was immaculate, whether it be civilian clothes or uniform. And we spent the first week in barracks in Trieste. And a very funny incident happened the very first night.
What was that?
I was allowed out. It was a Friday night we were allowed out, the first night. I'll always remember, we got paid in the morning. And then we're all spruced up that night, going down to the big nappy club in the town. So this friend of mine, Cottle Edwards, little Eddie, by this time, by the way, I'd been made up to corporal again, been made up with corporal. And as we went down the road, going down this main street, by the way, Rossetti Barracks.
Rossetti Barracks,
yeah.
Right.
As we left Rossetti Barracks, and going down the road, we saw this lovely girl in front of us. We're rapidly catching up with her. She had lovely long black hair down to her waist. Now, during that week, we had been picking up snatches of Italian from the civilians who worked in the camp, in the barracks. And as we drew level with this girl, I said, Buonasera, Chichi. And she immediately stopped. She turned round, she said, Al buonasera, ye, I come for Aberdeen. She was a nappy girl. So when we got to the nappy club, my friend Eddie decided to take off and left me with this girl from the nappy. And we had a smashing night that night. The nappy club was beautiful. On the ground floor, they had a lovely restaurant and then a bar. And the menu there was fantastic. You got all sorts of food, British food, like, you know. And then upstairs was a lovely big dance hall where a Friday and a Saturday night there was a 7 or 8 piece band played. And it was very, very well attended by the soldiers.